You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Gossip Girl is the Supra threat actor. Chronicle sees linking Stuxnet, Flame, and Dooku. Locker Goga's destructive functionality may be a feature, not a bug. Venezuela now says its power grid is being hacked by Chile and Colombia. The U.S. designates Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. What's up with New Zealand and hidden networked cameras? And second thoughts about what counts as a preliminary forensic investigation. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, April 9th, 2019. Chronicle, Alphabet's security unit, has reported the results of their investigation of various strains of malware that have hit industrial systems, Stuxnet, Dooku, and Flame. Not only are some variants returning, but Chronicle sees them as connected to Gossip Girl, which it calls a supra threat actor, a collection of threat actors interacting with one another in complex ways. This will be worth watching, not only for what may be learned about more than three troublesome strains of malware, but also to see whether Chronicle's metaphysics catches on. The researchers want, as they put it, quote, to compensate for an ontological deficiency in threat intel terminology and to investigate a collaborative umbrella of threat actors. They think that the one-on-one equivalence of a threat actor to an institution or organization has left us incapable of accurately representing multi-institution, multi-country, or multi-group orchestration in collaborative operational deployment, platform deployment, or generally complex deconfliction practices. Thus, the category of supra threat actor. The threat researchers at Securonix have taken a close look at Locker Goga, the ransomware strain that afflicted Norsk Hydro and others. The security firm has concluded that Locker Goga's destructive functionality may well be a feature, not a bug. The exact infection mechanism isn't known, but it's probably social engineering, possibly using maliciously crafted RTF or Microsoft Word files. According to Securonix, some strains of Locker Goga change an infected system's administrator passwords and log the victims off. That's not unusual behavior for straight-up ransomware, and it suggests to the researchers that whoever's running Locker Goga may be playing, at least in some cases, a deeper game. ZDNet talked to people at FireEye's Mandiant unit about Locker Goga, and they think that even this more aggressive and destructive functionality may be consistent with ordinary criminals. They may not be saboteurs or nation-state intelligence services. They may be ordinary extortionists trying harder to motivate their victims to pay. Measuring the true cost of a cybersecurity incident can be tricky business. There are the obvious measurable things like downtime, unavailability, and missed revenue. But what other factors should organizations consider when calculating the potential costs? Mike O'Malley is Vice President of Strategy at Radware, and he sees organizations taking a more holistic approach.
Previously, when we were having this discussion, say 4 or 5 years ago, you know, the discussion was about, well, what's the, you know, what is the cost of a cyber attack in terms of downtime, or in terms of website outage, or in terms of lost e-commerce business, or something like that. But very, you know, very direct costs, I would say. And then looking at that from an ROI perspective, of what are the costs then for cybersecurity in terms of software and things like that that I want to put in place to prevent that. And what we've seen then over the last couple of years is enterprises have gotten much more knowledgeable, I would say, in an unfortunate way, as these breaches have become more and more common, that there are much longer lasting impacts and much longer lasting costs beyond just the initial cost of 30 minutes of downtime, right? And those things tend to be shareholder lawsuits, loss of trust, churn, loss of brand value. You know, if you look at the case of Yahoo, you know, it actually drove down their stock price and cost them, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in their transaction when they were being sold. So, you know, there's lots of additional costs beyond just the cost of the 20 or 30 minute outage that can make the value of the breach or the cost of the breach much, much higher exponentially than it initially is, let's say, in the first hours or days after the breach.
What do you suppose is driving the inclusion of these costs in the equation now where they weren't there before?
I think the main reason is a good thing, which is these discussions have moved up to the C-level, right? They move from discussions within the CIO or the CISO group of, okay, with our particular, you know, budget and investment profile to protect the business, how much, you know, money emphasis can we put into securing our data and securing our applications within the IT department. The discussion has gone from there to now a brand level or a company level discussion at the C level, which is if we had a black swan event and our website went down or IP was stolen or private records were hacked, what would be the long-term impact to the business in terms of share price? What would it mean to our overall revenues? What would it mean to customer satisfaction and churn? To get a much more holistic view of that, so that as part of kind of, you know, as part of scenario planning at the executive level, the C-suite has a much better understanding of that, because what we're finding is when there are these large breaches like Target and others, it's the C-level that's held responsible now. It is the CEO and the CFO. It's not just delegated to the CISO or somebody in the IT department. I think that's the big change.
Now, where do you suppose we are when it comes to being able to accurately measure and predict the risk of these sorts of things? Is it still early days where we're doing a lot of guessing, or have we been at this long enough that we can make accurate predictions?
I think we're getting much, much better. I think we are certainly able to make accurate predictions. In fact, you know, one of the things that's a big emphasis within the industry is using now machine learning and automation, because what we're seeing is the bad guys have leveraged that now for large-scale complex attacks that, to be frank, are just too difficult for humans to combat against, right? That I have an automated enemy and I can't have a manual defense and keep up. And so security has gotten much more sophisticated to the point that many of these solutions now are becoming automated and intelligent in their own right, where they're looking at the behavior of all of your applications, looking for anomalies, and basically sorting through clues, trying to solve the mystery of are you under attack or not, right? And so they're getting much, much better at that. which puts the enterprise on level footing, where now they have an automated response to what is a sophisticated and automated attacker. But there's no question this is going to be an ongoing struggle, because it's clearly an arms race, right? The bad guys will continue to get more sophisticated and better, and the good guys are going to continue to get more sophisticated and better. But the important first step is now we're fighting fire with fire and using automation in the defense side, where automation has already been in place on the attack side.
That's Mike O'Malley from Radware. Venezuela's Chavista regime continues to use its failing grid as a handy stick with which to beat the neighbors. According to Colombia reports, this time, Mr. Maduro says, the cyber attacks against Venezuelan power generation and distribution are coming from Chile and Colombia. Both are, in Mr. Maduro's view, Yankee cat's paws. The allegation of cyber attack is no more plausible in its current version than it was when Caracas first came out with it. Venezuela's grid failures are quite easily explicable in terms of corruption, neglect, and decaying infrastructure. Haaretz reports that a hacktivist, Dark Coder, claims to have breached Israel's voter database as part of Op Israel. Whether Dark Coder has actually done so or simply regifted old breaches is unclear. Investigation is underway. So far, not much else has surfaced with respect to Op Israel. The U.S. has designated Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. In a speech marking the country's National Nuclear Technology Day, Iran's President Rouhani responded that the U.S. is the real terrorist group because it's allied with ISIS. This is a long-standing Iranian claim that generally has found few takers. Tehran has indeed not liked the mostly Sunni killers of ISIS, but the caliphate really hasn't been popular in any Western capitals either. The practical effect of the declaration will be to further criminalize business and other dealings with Iran. There are at least a couple of saucy hidden networked cameras in the news this week, both with a New Zealand connection. We mean conceptual connection, you understand, not necessarily a network connection. For your consideration, a former Kiwi naval attaché in Washington is believed to have installed a hidden camera in an embassy's toilet. Alas, he did so with a degree of ineptitude it's difficult to credit, especially in a Navy officer. The camera he allegedly installed only took pictures of people's feet as they sat on the seat of ease, and then it just kind of broke and fell out of the ceiling, thereby blowing the gaff, or so people say. Sad. But who sweeps these embassies anyway? Don't get cocky, any of you Five Eyes. Add to this the experience of a New Zealand family vacationing in Ireland, as any responsible father would do when taking a holiday in the Emerald Isle, Pater, whose day job is InfoSec consultant. He did a quick sweep of their Airbnb. According to Naked Security's account of the incident, the tenant's sweep found a camera hidden in a smoke detector. He called Airbnb, which initially told him that he could cancel his stay, but he wouldn't be receiving a refund. He also called the owner of the house, who hung up on him. Airbnb has since apologized because, of course, undisclosed surveillance cameras are a violation of their policy, and any cameras, disclosed or not, in a bedroom or a bathroom are probably also a violation of the law. So really, security and voyeurism aren't the same thing. Maybe an artificial intelligence can't tell the difference, but it seems to us a regular human intelligence ought to know better. And speaking of artificial intelligence, the Army Research Lab has been working on an AI that, as Defense One's headline puts it, would be able to read soldiers' minds. Our military desk thinks the U.S. Army has set a pretty low bar for itself. Surely there's someone at ARL who knows that any half-aware staff sergeant can read soldiers' minds as easily as falling off a log. Or maybe ARL is working on a biomimetic program, like that mechanical dog nose the chemical sensor guys have searched for lo these many years. Never got out of 6-3, if you're wondering, or so the Pentagon budget and S&T transition desk tells us. Anywho, now this. If the Daily Beast has it right, and Smart Money says they are, that preliminary forensic investigation the U.S. Secret Service performed on Mar-a-Lago gatecrasher Yuxing Zhang's USB thumb drive consisted of an agent plugging it into one of his agency's computers, where some sort of unwanted program began to run. Ooh, and the agents shut that machine down pronto, so no harm done, right? Or maybe not much harm done, or well, maybe harm done. Who knows? Doing that with a USB drive is like eating that half-melted ice cream you found on the sidewalk. There's no 5-second rule with malware. And so, Watson, the game is afoot. Miss Zhang had 4 cell phones, a laptop computer, an external hard drive, and a USB drive in her possession when she was detained at Mar-a-Lago. In her hotel room were found 5 SIM cards, 9 USB drives, a 5th cell phone, that's 5, count them, 5, and a signal detector of the kind you might use if you were, for example, a New Zealander on a holiday at an Airbnb. And what, Watson, would be the dog that didn't bark? Ms. Zhang wasn't carrying a swimsuit, so one deduces she wasn't there for the pool party. Professor Moriarty was unavailable for comment. Elementary.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. He's also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, it's great to have you back.
It's good to be back, Dave.
You have got a story this week about some studies that some folks did about permissions on various mobile operating systems. What's going on
right,
here?
Right. This is on iOS app permissions. This is from Wandera.
Okay.
And they have looked at 30,000 apps and found that a lot of them request permissions that you may not be aware they're requesting. The point of the study is we often download these apps and we go through the permission process like with just a click. It's like a pencil whipping. You know, you're just going to go ahead and say, yep, I agree to these things.
Yeah.
But
clicking on the EULA.
Right. And,
yeah.
and this is a perennial issue that we like to talk about. But this one, this study is pretty good in its breakdown.
Okay.
62% of these apps requested access to your photo library. 54% requested access to your camera.
Out of 30,000 apps.
Out of 30,000 apps,
okay.
Right? And these are a mixture of paid and unpaid or free apps, right?
Okay, yeah.
And 51% asked for your location when it's in use. So one of the things they talk about in the study is how often do you take a picture of a whiteboard when you're at work?
Right, just to save an idea so it doesn't get...
Right.
Before someone else comes along and erases it,
exactly.
You take a picture.
You have an office policy that you have to erase the whiteboard before it's gone. Well, that's intellectual property. And if I have an app that's not on the up and up, I may not be violating any of the App Store's rules.
Mm-hmm.
I just may be collecting information about what people write on whiteboards.
Well, you may be violating the rules of your company if that app has access to your photos, right?
Right. Yeah, you may be in deliberately... exfiltrating data from your company,
mm-hmm.
right? That use case is a serious possibility.
Mm-hmm.
The article,
we've seen plenty of examples of that where someone will take an innocent photograph of somebody standing in front of some terminal or something, and mm-hmm. written on a sticky note on the monitor, it says it has the IP address, username, and password. Right?
Yeah,
written
we've
out.
We've seen that. The interesting part about the iOS permissions is that in iOS, if something doesn't access your personal information, it doesn't need the permission. So if an iOS app needs internet permission, it just gets it.
When you would do an installation, it doesn't ask. It assumes internet permission is implied.
Right.
It doesn't ask for that specifically.
The iOS doesn't even recognize it as a permission. If an app wants it, an app gets it.
Right. Okay.
So the article goes on to make a couple of recommendations. Regularly check your app permissions and settings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I just did this before we recorded this.
Right.
And it's actually really simple. I'm an Android user. I have a Google Pixel 3 with, I think, Pi, whatever their cutesy little name for their operating system is.
Yeah.
And in settings, you go to apps, and then down at the bottom, there's a advanced, and you click on permissions, and it really breaks it down very simply for you.
Yeah.
By the permission, and you can click on the permission, and then you can see the list of apps that you have installed and which apps are using that permission right now.
Right.
Like, and we did this beforehand, and I went through the microphone permission and revoked the right of Instagram and Facebook Messenger to have access to my microphone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want them listening to me and then serving me ads, Dave.
Stop. You just stop. You're fired. Go away. Ladies and gentlemen, it's sad. This will be the last appearance of Joe Kerrigan on the CyberWire podcast.
No, there's plenty of studies that say that's not the case.
Yeah, and on iOS, it's similarly quite easy. You go to the privacy settings, but it's a good to, you know, hey, set yourself a reminder or something, you know, once a month on your calendar. Go through, just review, go check your privacy settings. Make sure nobody's doing stuff you don't want them to do. You have to be vigilant.
Yep.
All
yes,
right.
You do.
Yeah. Well, Joe Kerrigan, as always, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.